Welcome to The Local Point. My name is Andrew Day and I'm the leader of Warwick District Council. This is an informal, behind-the-scenes conversation with people who are shaping the policies and programs, touching lives right across Warwick District and thrashing through some of the real issues we're working on at the moment across the district. Good stuff. It's that time again. Another month like that. What happened? We're back at 1 Mill Street. This is The Local Point, and I've got a couple of really interesting characters with us today. I've got my dear friend and advocate for things climate change, Gareth Dorr. Thank you, Gareth. This is not unfamiliar territory for you at 1 Mill Street.
No, love it down here. I work from out here. So yes, it's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Good stuff. And also I've got Alan Reid, Councillor Alan Reid, joining us today, who's been our first portfolio holder for climate change and the climate dealing with the climate emergency. Welcome, Alan.
Thank you very much.
It wasn't a big journey from Barford, I hope.
Not
too painful?
No, not at all.
Good stuff. Well, today's general theme for our conversation. It is just a chat around the kitchen table. It's not, no one's going to be pinned to a wall for anything said here today. But it is an opportunity for us just to, I think, reflect, share our thinking and where we're going, because it is a very fast-moving subject, the whole question of how we get to net zero here in Warwick District and how we do that. It's not just a local government challenge, so it is very much a business challenge as well. And there is a really strong business case emerging for that. So what I'm going to do is just kind of throw some questions and some ideas to you guys and see how you can please let it rip from there. So, Gareth, we first crossed paths. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, over a beer probably in your establishment up at the top of the parade.
At
Cellar Club.
Cellar Club.
Cellar Club it was. And then you came and you got very vexed over the parade, if I remember rightly, and you presented a petition to the council for the closing of the parade. So give us a bit of your story. Where have you been? Where are you going? And what's your ambition at the moment?
Yes, we did meet at Cellar Club, a fine establishment in Leamington.
Of course.
Which I have actually now sold, but yes, great times there. We did. I think we first met, it was a beer that we had.
It was.
And when, obviously, with COVID and the lockdown, we went through that process of the parade being shut. And at that point, we were able to put tables and chairs out the front. And
that's right.
It transformed how the whole town felt. I mean, the parade is obviously the most important road that we've got in Leamington. And to see it with no cars, no buses, and all the fumes and noise, and it was wonderful. And you could see people walking up and down, sitting outside in the glorious sunshine as we had that summer. And it was just great. And I thought, why isn't this a permanent feature? It should be a permanent feature.
Yeah.
It was only closed from, top of the parade down to just before the town hall, I think,
wasn't
it?
That's right.
The people were worried about bus stops and things like that. But, the bus stopping at the top and further down, it seemed to work. And you've got that lovely space then that's free of fumes. Yeah. And, it looked like a destination that you really want to go and visit.
COVID was such a shock to us all in the way we were living. It made us sort of sit back and look at things differently, Alan.
It's a shame, actually, because just what you've just been describing is we thought this was the new world, didn't we? Mm. And we said we mustn't go back to the old ways. But unfortunately, we have. We've gone back to the old ways. I mean, I can't cross my street in Barford because of the school traffic every morning. Mm. I mean, we've just gone back to the old ways. We've learned nothing, unfortunately.
I completely agree. Absolutely. I thought, great, people are starting to see what we can do now. We don't need all these cars driving around and this, that, and the other. But we have. It's sort of in our nature to go back to our default position rather than learning the lessons.
That's right.
Then go, right, what have we learned? Okay, let's use that and take that on forward. So, I completely agree with you there. Yeah.
No, it's interesting. We've established since then the Leamington Transformation Board. In fact, there's news shortly about our new independent chair that we will have appointed to that board, who challenged specifically in how we rethink Leamington and take on board those lessons learnt from COVID, but also recognising that the parade and other spaces like it are urban open spaces. The way you used it and the benefits that could come from just reimagining, thinking through and being sensible about how we also deal with our transport. And I think also understanding what opportunities there are about active travel, you know, alternate forms of transport other than diesel buses and cars running outside your businesses. Absolutely. But look, it's all that is coming. But that you were a bit of a, if you don't mind, an advocate for change. You were quite brave as a business, stepping up, getting all your chairs and everything out on the table. And you you know, weren't, if you don't mind, backward and coming forward and telling us as a council we need to get our act together. And that's a live petition. That is certainly a live item in the new plans for Leamington. And we'll need a lot more consultation before anyone emails me. but Gareth, you sold up there. What are you up to now?
I sold up. Obviously, COVID was terrible. It hit hospitality particularly hard. Mm. It's difficult to get staff and supplies and all kinds of stuff. And now which I hopefully will touch on again, the energy prices going up and up and up. It was just a difficult game. So I'm still working with hospitality and retail and leisure.
Yeah.
So what I'm passionate about is getting businesses using more sustainable or ethical products. Mm. So that's what I'm doing now. I'm currently...
So give us an example. What would you describe as a... Well, I think I know what a sustainable and ethical product is, but...
Sure. There's different things. So one of the exciting things I'm working on at the moment is with a company called Check Your Drink.
Yeah.
So this is an ethical product to do with drink spiking. Now, I saw this firsthand at Cellar Club. It only happened once. But there was, we saw the rise in drink spiking happening in Leamington, which is such a horrible thing to do. Mm. So I actually briefed my staff and saying, look, it's probably not going to happen here, but if it does happen, these are the steps that you follow. Literally 2 weeks later, I got a phone call from my manager at the time saying, can you come down? We've had a problem with somebody's drink here. They did everything right.
Oh, bang on. Thank you.
Within 3 minutes or so, the police were there.
Yeah.
They were wonderful.
Yeah.
One of the staff members think they knew who the guy was, got him.
Right.
Police got him. Brilliant. Arrested him. So it was great. So, but what we need to realise is that this is happening. It can happen anywhere. You know, we're a high-end bar. Yeah. It happened with us.
Yeah.
So these simple tests, you literally just dab it in your drink, one side, another side. If it changes colour, you know it's been spiked, you don't drink it, then you can inform the staff and whatever, you can deal with it. Every hospitality venue in the country should have these. I mean, we take so many steps to keep people safe.
So the bar provides them available to you when you go buy your drinks, and you can use this test just to be sure that your drink hasn't been spiked.
Absolutely.
And then take precaution if you have.
We need to normalise this now.
I understand.
You know, we take steps for all sorts of safety
reasons. You don't, I've got to tell you, there was a bright idea in Australia, because drink driving, as you might expect, is a bit of an issue. In certain parts of Australia, they don't talk about... you know, how long the journey is. They talk about how many beers you can drink during that period of time.
And they have drive-through licenses as well, don't they?
Yeah, bottle-os. And so, you never want to run dry. It's only a six-pack to get there, they say.
Yeah.
But what they did, just to help you out, Gareth, maybe they put into the bars, because of concern, they changed the drink drive level down to 0.05 instead of 0.08 and felt that we all should be better informed. So they put these breathalyzer test machines into the bar. Big mistake. You would think sensible people, you know, oh, have I had a bit too much? I'll go and test myself on the machine. No chance. People were having competitions to see who could get the biggest scores. You still standing at 0.15? You know, and then I got to 0.18. You know, it was a big mistake. So you're not in this product. I'm applying the Australian drink psychology to this. You don't think people will be testing drinks? You know, it's not. There's no downside here, is there?
Absolutely
sure of that. Fine. You have tested it on Australians, have you?
Never tested it on Australians, but you'll be the first. So,
okay,
yeah.
Cool. That's very reassuring, because the thing is, it just becomes a habit. Then you're just doing it as a general check routine. It's not a big deal.
We've got to normalise this.
So the bar provides this. What is it? A stick? Is it?
Yeah, it's a small strip that you just dip either side in.
A bit like a litmus test.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, if you're at the bar, or if you see somebody hovering around your drink and they walk away and you think, well, that didn't feel quite safe, it's down to, you know, it's obviously down to the bar. I would like, you know, councils or maybe bids, like Bid Leamington or something, to buy these tests to give to hospitality venues to use.
Yeah.
And then we know that the first rule as a licensee is to make sure that your customers and your staff are safe.
Yeah.
This is a vital thing.
And we're a big student town, Leamington. Yep. There's no question there'll be a crop of new students about to arrive any day now. And obviously their parents and each other, they really need to be confident. This is a safe town. This is a place you can be confident.
That's right.
There won't be any of that sort of... and there's some horrible stories that have circulated of what's happened as a result of spiked drinks.
Yes.
Okay, so that's a cool idea.
That's like that, you know, and other things. So it's about reducing plastic, reducing waste.
Okay.
And I'm on the hunt for new, exciting products.
Okay, so you want to bring them into Leamington and to Warwick District. Ideas in practical ways we can reduce our plastic usage, improve our, if you like, our footprint, our climate footprint.
The problem about plastic, of course, is we've got to get the manufacturers to stop using it.
Quite.
I mean, if you go into any supermarket, the amount of plastic covered products is still too much. I mean, my wife has tried to get rid of our plastic, but she says, I can't. Every time I go into the shop, it's covered in plastic. Yeah. And until it's cascades down for the manufacturers and the shops, it's going to be extremely difficult to
completely agree. I mean, why is a cucumber wrapped in plastic? I mean, it's just it's got its own coating, it's fine, you don't need to put plastic around
but interestingly, in our local shop in Barford, the community shop in Barford, they're actually encouraging manufacturers or suppliers to provide in goods. non-plastic goods. So you see these little wooden trays that you can get now.
Yeah.
And so it's got to come from the top, though.
Yeah.
Though I think we can influence it from the bottom as well.
Right. Yeah.
We've got to say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to buy that.
Yeah.
I completely agree. And again, you know, at Cellar Club, our main thing was to cut down as much as possible. Now, most of our packaged stuff, sadly, you know, you have to buy Coca-Cola or whatever, and other Cokes are available. But from our other suppliers, like Aubrey Allen, got all our meat from there, great guys. All of it came in sustainable packaging.
Yeah, and they've been leaders, though. You can see that. And you want to support those businesses.
Absolutely.
But I've got to say, Coke just tastes better in a glass bottle.
It does.
It really does. It just does not cut it.
But the last time I had a Coke in a glass bottle was in Delhi.
Yeah.
But unfortunately,
it didn't work for you.
Well, no, the person that was selling it, he opened it with a bottle opener and then got this horribly old rag to wipe the top of the bottle. And I thought that's counterproductive for what I really wanted.
You could see the night stretch before you from there. So these practical things, if in a sense having someone like yourself come into a business and have that clean, fresh eyes and offer suggestions that have you thought about, using like you know, Russ and his team up at Aubrey Island, you know, more sustainable packaging, getting rid of the plastic on items. It is tough. I mean, just simply having your own water bottle, funnily enough, it does take a little moment's thought. Instead of it, the number one sale is plastic bottles full of water. I mean, it's just beggars belief.
It's criminal. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Why buy a plastic bottle of water? I do not get it.
Yeah.
Buy a sustainable bottle yourself. Fill it up at home.
And we've got to think about things like drinking fountains in the towns.
But also the refill scheme that we've got.
Yeah.
Not enough people know about it.
No. But tell us a bit more about it now.
Well, the refill scheme is they're encouraging local shops to put this badge up, which is refill your plastic bottle in our shop. It has two benefits. First of all, you're only going to use your plastic bottle once, but equally, you're going to go into a shop and maybe want to go and buy something.
Yeah.
So that's why they encourage it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, but it's not well enough advertised, and I've said to our people that we need to put more on our website about it.
Yeah. And generally get the word out. And I think the more they say it's 21 times you've got to tell somebody something before it, well, certainly maybe more for me, before it finally registers. But it is, and it's changing lifelong habits.
Yeah.
And we're so used to a convenience culture that the idea of actually bringing your own bottle or taking a bottle in and refilling it is an anathema.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I mean, by definition, we've always been a throwaway culture, I call it, where we're just used to, oh, it's broken, throw it away.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, in Barford when they've got the fix-it.
Well, we've got the repair shop.
The repair shop, that's it. I was trying to remember the name of it then. The repair shop, you know, that's great.
Yeah.
You know, take along your bike that's broken and they'll repair it. It's a great idea.
I had one of the most enjoyable visits I've had for a long while when I went to Action 21 this week. I dropped in there. If you've never been, do go. The whole charity, and it's been there for many, many years, has been and used to be down at what I call the tip, but it's not the tip. It's a household waste recycling centre. Yes. Sorry. anyway, they're no longer there, but they're down there on Althorpe Street. And I went in and had a look and because I attended their AGM, and there were two guys out the back whose mission was to recover metal. And one chap's cutting handles off old kettles that can't be recycled and filling up. He says, you know, for a wheelbarrow full of these things, I get myself £200. And I'm going, whoa. So he's on a mission there. And they raised £2,000 last year just from bits of old copper and wire from recovery. Wow. There was another, you'll love this, and you really must pass this on to the team, Alan. There was another woman there whose name just simply I'll call as Emma. And I met Emma, and Emma was on the climate change People's Assembly. People's Inquiry. And if you remember that, it was done to help us develop our plans for the climate emergency. And it was formed of a demographic mix of views. So there were some there who were passionate for, you know, saving the planet. And Emma was a climate change skeptic, absolutely thought the whole thing was a rubbish, Alan. And because of her experience on that People's Inquiry, she got motivated, she converted her, and here she is volunteering in at Action 21, sorting games for the children's holidays and all the rest of it, and getting them ready for reuse.
Of course, Action 21 was partly responsible for our EcoFest as well.
Well, there you go. Mm. I mean, they are an amazing organisation, and they're almost like a community centre. Mm. I mean, volunteers turn up there at 8:30 or 9 in the morning and expect their day's work to sort things. I know I've met another guy there. You'll love this. It's sort of the retro view of reuse. He was in with a big bag collecting 50 DVDs to take home and watch. I'm going, so that's a lot of DVDs. And he goes, yeah, but I'll take my time. I'll get through them. And he pays his £10 for his 50 DVDs. And then he brings them back and donates them back and gets another 50. And he says it's cheaper than a Netflix subscription. Absolutely,
that's
bang on.
That's genius.
But, you know, you can get a winter coat there for 50p. 50p. And they said that there's an amazing, that one of them, you know, there were some very high-end coats going for 50p. But if you go, I'm sorry, but many of our charity shops have actually got quite expensive. Mm-hmm. And we kind of miss the sort of purpose isn't just making money for the charity. It's also providing, you know, really good cheap clothes to people to reuse.
Yeah.
But that whole concept of reuse in Action 21 really came to life for me in that visit.
And this is going back quite a few decades now, because, of course, we always used to take our old lemonade bottles back.
We would get
sixpence, an old sixpence back on the bottle, rather than throwing it away. And of course, we don't do that because they're all plastic. Though, funnily enough, in Barford now, I would say about 30% of the population are now on glass milk bottles.
Glass milk bottles, and the return of the Milky.
What a difference that's made to our own plastic volume has gone down, I would think, about 30 to 40%, because, of course, these great big plastic milk bottles take up an awful lot of room.
They do.
And that's a great idea. I mean, and people don't realise what you can do to recycle. My wife's been doing this. Well, when we lived in Barford, she was doing it. We used to collect wine bottle corks.
One or two of those then in your house.
Over lockdown, we had a few. Yeah. Yes, there was a few. If anybody watched my Facebook Lives on a Saturday night, then you would have seen how many we got through. But yeah, I remember one day one of the residents in Barford came along, and I'm not joking, two bin bags full from just them.
Wow.
And fair play to them. It's wonderful. No, but you can take those. They can get recycled. Now, where we've moved up to into Warwick, and now we collect, what do you call it, the pill packets, you know, like tablet packets.
Yeah. Yes.
So we collect all those. Well, she does most of the work. This is her thing.
Yeah.
And then she takes them back and they get recycled again.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many things that you can do. You don't realise. You know, you normally just throw that in the bin.
And if you
goes
think,
to waste.
And it is the trend is turning. You can see that in our overall waste collections, can't you?
Yeah.
Obviously, we've got the new waste contract in, and I was surprised just how much, when you have a wheelie bin, how easy it is to fill up with recycling.
Yeah.
So, I'm crushing everything I can to get it in there, but it was quite real for me.
It's good because we've always recycled anyway, and now you just put it in one bin, that's so much easier rather than it was always me going out, I've got two boxes, right, which one goes in which
filing,
again?
Yeah.
So now it's just pour it in, great, yeah, crush it first, then pour it in.
That's it.
Our black bin, you know, it's fine being picked up every few weeks because we're not using it as much, you know, it's now really focusing on it. It's so much easier to do now.
It'll be interesting to see what the landfill figures will be after a year of this as well, because the landfill figure here is not that good at the moment.
Mm. And I should just say there is a distinction between the numbers being reported at the tip, when the screen, you know, where they say 50%, and what we're doing in the household waste when we collect from home, domestic collections. And you're right, Gareth, because we noticed, you know, when the lockdowns hit, everybody was, you couldn't go out to the pub anymore. You were drinking at home and eating everything at home. The waste collections just went through the roof.
Absolutely.
And we've only got a certain number of waste collection vehicles to do the job. And I have to say, Warwick was taking a lot more glass in recycling than we had previously. Yes. So you're confirming that as to what was going on in Barford anyway.
Yeah. We help with that, definitely.
Well done. Well done.
But it'll be interesting to see when we open the MRF, the Midlands Material Recycling Facility. Which is a combination of all our local authorities are all partners of this thing near Coventry, which is going to open, I think, in about a year, isn't
about
it?
About a year,
And that then is going to revolutionise recycling.
So what it is the, you know, your blue lid bin gets in the back of the lorry. The lorries come along, tip it all out, goes on a conveyor belt, and then these robots... I think I've said this previous. These robots pick, don't they? They pick the tins out, the bottles out, the paper out, and all the rest of it. And that's why it's my big, big learning from all of this, that you can't put shredded paper in your blue bin because the robots can't see it. I thought, why not? We could put Tetra Paks in now, which is great for, you know. Mm. But you are right. And I think they should call it a Smurf because it's the Sherborne materials.
Is it
blue?
We should do that. We should do the bin colour change. Maybe, you know, the blue lid and the white bin Anyway, you're right. A fair point. But Alan, it was good of you to come in today. We've had one very, very busy period moving on with our climate emergency action plan.
We have.
Do you want to talk about, you came to us with a new planning policy, which is revolutionary, possibly the first in the country. We've had approved through council now. Do you want to just talk a bit about that and what that would mean?
Yeah, I mean, I'll refer to it as a DPD from now on, but what that refers to is a development planning document, which has the same strength as the local plan itself. So because it has the same strength, it's got to go through a whole process, which includes going to examination in public. And the great thing that Andrew's just referred to is the fact that we've got this DPD document now to a stage where it was fit for being submitted. So at a special full council on the 7th of September, it was unanimously approved to submit it for examination in public. And what this means, it's called the Net Zero DPD, and what this means is that, and I don't know how many people who are listening to it are frustrated at all the new development that's going on, not a single bit of which is going to be sustainable housing, except for our local authority housing, which is leading the way.
So, Alan, just to be clear, just for everyone's benefit, what is sustainable housing? What does that mean?
Well, it's net zero. What it means is that effectively you're getting rid of fossil fuels.
Okay, so...
And you're going to generate electricity through PV panels. Okay. So we're going to either have... we're either going to have heat pumps, or if they're still going to have gas boilers, they've got to be hydrogen-ready gas boilers.
So the insulation levels are higher?
Insulation levels are higher.
So they're cheaper to heat?
Yep.
But so the costs of running these homes are going to be less. They have to have sustainable, renewable energy, solar panels on the roof, you know, as you said about the boilers, heat pumps, all these sorts of technologies built in.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what that means, of course, is it's not just people being green. It's the fact that, as you just said, it's actually going to make people's lives cheaper.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And that, you know, if it was just a green effort, then it probably wouldn't equate with people's thinking. But the fact of the matter is, most people are concerned about energy prices.
Mm.
And we were talking earlier, Andrew, about the fact that we need to help our local authority housing get better insulation.
Yeah.
So that their heating bills can go down. But we've got to think again about how we build these houses. And the developers, unfortunately, are very conservative with a small C. They're not going to change their habits. It's same as. Gas boilers, insulation only to the current building regulations, which is just not good enough.
And they're not really current, are they? You're going to have to help me here. 2014, was it?
2013.
2013 building standards. Yeah. And you think how the technologies have moved on.
Completely.
It's bonkers. We've got a choice with our council housing, because we buy a lot of houses on these estates and commission them when they're coming forward for being built. And we actually, the net zero standard of those properties is higher than the four market ones. And because I'm, you know, a local councillor, I go out canvassing and I put leaflets, so I get to know these streets very well. And I can tell you every single council house, because it's got an EV charging point.
Yeah.
It's the council houses have got the EV charging points
and PV panels
and not the full market ones.
And the thing that people need to realise is that when they're buying their current new house from a developer, they're going to actually have to retrofit a heat pump in 2025.
Right, so and that's 3 minutes away.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. The fact of the matter is, the longer we go on without having this DPD, the development document in place, there's going to be more and more retrofitting required.
Mm-hmm. So
and it's criminal.
So, Alan, there's been the planning policy, and being a businessman, Gareth, you'll appreciate this too. At the end of the day, the market will respond, and at the end of the day, there's going to be questions about sustainability.
Correct.
Will the developers be able to afford to meet the terms of this new planning policy? You have gone through two rounds of consultation to get to this point, am I right? Yep. So we've had a lot of submissions and responses from developers, and how's it looking?
We were pleasantly surprised that the level wasn't that great. We were expecting a crescendo of, well, we can't afford this, is the viability. But the great thing is we've had viability consultants looking at what we're proposing, and they're really quite relaxed that the document is robust enough.
Right.
But the other thing I wanted to bring up, Andrew, because it's also a crazy situation with our homes building company, where we're in joint venture with Vistry.
Milverton Homes, which is a council company we've started to bring forward housing
now,
development.
On a development in Kenilworth of 620 homes or something like that, we're building, I think it's 300 or 250 or something. Anyway, the point I'm leading to is we're going to make our 200-odd houses, which are local authority housing effectively, are going to be net zero. But Vistry, the developer, we tried to persuade him to go down the same, and he can't see it.
No.
Yeah.
So people are going to walk into a development and say, well, hang on a minute. The local authority housing is great, but you're asking me to pay hundreds of thousands for a house, which I'm going to have to retrofit.
But to be clear here, the local authority housing, some of which is affordable, in council housing, shared ownership, or social housing, but the other is for market. So we're going to be, Milverton Homes will be selling in the same marketplace houses that are less expensive to run with higher, net zero credentials.
Yeah.
And it's the mindset. It is a challenge for us, isn't it, to help even when we're in JVs with development companies. But
I can't understand why the developer can't see that he's actually going to be at a disadvantage if he's not careful. Because he's going to have to, if people ask him, will I have to retrofit? If he's honest, he's going to have to say yes. Yeah. You're going to have to retrofit in a few years' time.
Mm.
So why go there?
You know,
well,
it's so true.
It comes back to your point earlier on that we should have learnt the lessons from what we had during COVID and lockdowns. And, you know, that's where my passion really grew for climate change, because it wasn't in the news like it was before, obviously because of COVID. Now it's starting to come back in again. But we have to think forward. And I think we've had this conversation a few times about just the town in general. we can't think about the next couple of years. We need to be thinking about what's everything going to be like in 10 years' time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, especially again with the parade argument.
Yeah.
The parade will not have the big shops there anymore. They just won't be there. They're all moving out to shopping centres.
Or it's online. You look or at the online. Online has just eaten the main, you know, department
Absolutely.
Store trade.
But you know, like Leamington Retail Park, you know, they're going to places like that because they can have bigger spaces, free car parking. And that's where people will be going. You know, we won't need to get buses into town to do your daily shop because you'll be going out to, you know, the Sainsbury's, the Tesco's, the Morrison's that are further out of town. That's just how it is.
Yes.
So we need to be thinking now, what do we want it to look like in 10 years' time? And how does, you know, shutting down the parade, having alternative forms of transport, how can we make it green and a destination that people want to come to and visit and spend money here.
But the other part to that is Leamington needs more people to live in it.
Absolutely.
You know, we need to think about the centre of Leamington in a more sustainable way as sustainable communities. And I think that's coming forward in our local plan and the way this Leamington Transformation Board is going to be approaching it. But setting higher building standards means that we're delivering products that are fit for the future, housing product that is fit for the future, rather than that it's much more expensive and much less efficient to have to go back and retrofit. And, you know, it's not going to get us to net zero anywhere near as quickly as changing the building standard now.
No.
But Alan, you're just on the builders' responses. Do you think, you know, where does it go from here? Are they going to put up a big fight with the Secretary of State, do you think? Are we about to become, to find ourselves in the middle of a fulcrum nationally because of this? I mean,
They'll obviously make representations at the examination in public because everybody's got the opportunity to put their case to the inspector. But he's going to have to make decisions about, particularly about ability, because that's where the developers are going to come from. They're going to say, we cannot afford to do what this document says we've got to do.
Yeah.
And the inspector's got a big, he's got quite a simple choice to make, really, which is, can we afford not to?
Yes.
And that's the point.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because we're going to have to do it later on anyway.
Yeah. And the government set out very clear.
Yeah, the Future Home Standard in 2025 is effectively going to do what we're trying to do now.
That's a good one. So can you talk us through what is the Future Home Standard? What is that marker? Who set it? I mean,
it's set by the government. And the Future Home Standard is to try and do what we're doing already now with this document we've just been talking about, where the standards are going to go far beyond the current building regulations. So it's going to do more on insulation, but it's going to do more about alternative means of heating.
Right.
But that's not going to, at the moment, it's only going to be 2025 before that comes out. And with all the things that the government has not done, I don't know whether 2025 is realistic by them anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I've written to the Secretary of State probably 3 or 4 times, saying what we're trying to do and why do we have to take the lead at our level instead of their level. I don't even get, I just get a sort of, dear John, thank you for your letter. And that they're not reacting to what I think is going to become really strong public pressure.
And again, to make this work and make it more affordable, if the developers all jump on board, then by, you know, again, it will scale up, and obviously the prices will come down because there'll be more competition. So, you know, you have to take the jump at some point.
Yeah,
let's do it now. Absolutely.
And we're talking about the green economy. I mean, the fact that people are saying at the moment, there are not enough people making heat pumps. Well, come on, guys.
Yeah,
yeah.
Start doing it. There's a new green industry.
So do you actually, am I stretching this a bit far to say that if we're leading the way with this new planning policy, it might also create an environment, a business environment, Gareth,
Absolutely.
Where people are prepared to invest in starting new heat pump building businesses or insulating businesses, and all of that will benefit regionally, locally. I mean,
and this has always been my point, and you've talked about it exactly right there, that by forcing these regulations, which we can't afford not to do, it does create opportunities.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, look at what's happening, you know, in Baggington with the you know, the electric batteries. From that, locally, think of all the businesses that can pop up to either use those batteries or supply to them.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's just growing more industries. And we should be thinking about different ways of you know, generating electricity rather than the old routes. You know, they talk about building new nuclear power stations. Well, that's all well and good in 10 years' time. But right now, you know, we could... I think it, I was reading something the other day. It would cost, say, for instance, 80 billion to provide enough wind turbines to power the country. And instead, we're thinking about giving more money to the energy companies. Now, more than 80 billion. So why are we doing that to continue down the route of oil and gas when we could be doing it far greener and cheaper than it will be? And obviously, but much better for the environment, much better for the environment, and creates more jobs, it's more jobs, opportunities.
And it's new technology jobs.
The trouble is we're having to play catch up. That's the trouble.
True.
We're trying to catch up with the fact that not enough was done in thinking about the alternatives of, to fossil fuels. So we've got to have this transition. We can't just turn the tap off. And that's that's where people, some people don't get it. And so when the new Prime Minister said she's going to open up more gas field exploration, people say, oh my God, no, don't do that. But we've got to have a transition. And the Ukraine war has really polarised opinion now.
It's pushed us along more quickly. In tackling this one. But Alan, you've been, it's not like you haven't had enough to do in your part-time life as a, as a district councillor and portfolio holder. You've also been championing, using your business skill set, a whole piloting scheme to determine whether or not we could bring a hydrogen hub to Warwick District. And this is quite progressing quite well. Do you want to just set the scene? What is a hydrogen hub, and why is it interesting and important for us around here?
Okay, well, first of all, the important thing to talk about is green hydrogen.
And what's the different types of hydrogen?
Well, green hydrogen is produced by, it's produced in what's called an electrolyzer. An electrolyzer requires electricity. If you provide electricity from a renewable source, then you can claim to be making green hydrogen because it's totally renewable at source.
So it has zero net carbon at either end, either in its manufacture or obviously in it. Hydrogen just produces water and energy, doesn't it? Have I got that right?
So I was really interested in the fact that we've got to have an alternative sitting alongside EV, because when we're looking at particularly at our refuse collection vehicles, the new contract unfortunately has come out before we've been able to do anything about this hydrogen hub. But big HGVs will not rely on batteries.
No.
I was told the other day that an HGV with batteries, the batteries would double the weight of an HGV. That big.
And we went to Dennis Eagle. It was one of the fun visits we had, actually. You get all these little outings as a councillor. It's great fun. It's exposing you to things you've never even thought of, you know. And I didn't know about Dennis Eagle, which is, you know, builds these RCVs here in Warwick District, you know, is a national, if not international, leader in the field. And putting lots of money into R&D and, you know, developing new product. And one of the things we went to look at was their electric RCVs, didn't we? Fabulous looking vehicles.
We had on trial.
We had on trial around Leamington. But the difficulty was the range, wasn't it?
Correct.
And we've got, obviously, we've got these range, you know, collection runs. Mm-hmm. And what you can't afford to do, believe me, and I can assure you from the emails I've had in the last 3 or 4 weeks, you don't want to mess up the waste management system. You don't want to have RCVs not getting round the circuit.
And, of course, the electric RCV we did have on trial was only on the urban runs, there was no anxiety about range, but with all the rural areas, an electric,
and they've got to get to the
they've got to get to Coventry,
the materials recycling facility.
I think Smurf's
better.
That's why I was quite keen, not very keen, to look at hydrogen, because I think actually there's a good business case for our district too.
So hang on, we bought 30 of these Generation 6 diesel RCVs.
Euro 6, yeah.
A Euro 6, thank you. And you're talking about a hydrogen hub, a green hydrogen hub to manufacture hydrogen.
Yes.
How's that going to help us with our waste vehicles?
Well, we're jumping a little bit ahead of because what we've got to do first
how
of all...
Could it? How
well,
could it?
Well, the first thing we've got to do is we've got to decide about what size of hydrogen hub we're going to build.
Okay.
Because... the consultants that we've employed have said, if you just want to have your 30 RCVs on hydrogen, then you'll need a one megawatt electrolyzer.
Okay.
But we've also then got to look at the fact that if we had a 3 megawatt electrolyzer, it would reduce the cost of hydrogen by about £2 a kilowatt.
And so just help me out here. Is using hydrogen cheaper than diesel?
At the moment, it is. So with the current energy prices, if we had a 3 megawatt electrolyzer, it would be cheaper than diesel.
Okay, so there's a business case here which is obviously going to save on carbon, which is absolutely in our mission as a council, but it could also mean we have a less expensive service.
Correct, but that's where we're at the moment. We're now looking to find a partner or partners who have got a good experience of hydrogen.
Are you getting any interest?
Oh. Incredible.
Can you name any names?
Well, the owner of Right Bus.
Who is?
Who's Joe Bamford.
I think we've heard of them. JCB? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Well, he's the son of JCB.
Son of JCB.
Yeah.
So they're big into hydrogen. I think they committed. What was it?
Right Bus. He's committed to Right Bus being totally 100% hydrogen bus.
Double-decker, proper
correct.
Urban bus.
Yeah. And we've also had National Grid, who are local to us. They wanted to talk to us because they, funnily enough, one of the women who we met is actually driving a National Grid hydrogen car.
Oh, wow.
A Toyota hydrogen car.
Okay.
Hang on,
doesn't the National Grid do electric?
Well,
so why do they
do gas?
Do they?
Yeah, what National Grid are doing is they're looking at putting hydrogen into the National Grid.
That's it.
So at the moment at Keele University, they're putting 20% hydrogen into the into a circuit to see if it works.
That's okay.
But they've also up in Cumbria, there's an experiment where a Ministry of Defence housing. Development is 100% hydrogen for heating and hot water.
I don't know, maybe it's my naivety. Hydrogen I was sort of the Hindenburg and like, it's like, here we go, woo! Right. Hydrogen bomb and hydrogen, is this like, if I was on that Ministry of Defence base, have I got something to worry about up there or what's the...
Well, of course, the health and safety is
I know.
All over it and there was absolutely no problem. I mean, it's no different to petrol, for goodness sake.
Or gas for that.
Or gas, you know. Yeah. But hydrogen is really exciting.
Yeah.
And I think that will be the future for transport. And, you know, even the big airline manufacturers are looking at hydrogen engines now. Yeah. So we should see those in 10 to 15
years. That's actually an interesting point because I had an article just a couple of weeks ago. Loganair, who are doing the local routes from Birmingham Airport, regional airports, and they are one of the first customers for Cromarty Firth, which is going to build the biggest hydrogen facility in the UK.
Wow.
And Loganair are wanting to convert their propeller driven aircraft to hydrogen.
Now, this is a green hydrogen.
Hydrogen.
Wow.
See, but this is
because the Cromarty Firth one is, of course, taking all the renewables
off the offshore wind
farms.
That makes sense.
Yeah, but it's Toyota have been hot on this from the beginning, haven't
correct.
They? You know, they've been pioneering hydrogen fuel cells.
Correct.
Which is, like, I think, you mentioned it before, all it does is produce water.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great.
Yeah.
And they're very efficient. Obviously, with Tesla and stuff, the electric cars have been taking the world by storm. But then people get worried about the lithium mining and all that. Again, new batteries have just been produced
And you've still got range anxiety with EVs.
Exactly. I mean, that will go away over the next coming years. But
will.
Now there's batteries that don't use any lithium at all. And I think it takes 3 minutes to fully charge them.
Yeah.
And the range you can get is 400 or 500 miles. Right.
And look, we've got the Battery Innovation Centre here in Warwick District, the UK's Battery Innovation Centre, where all these boffins are geeing up on not just how to create the battery, but then how to manufacture it, which is the big thing. How do you do this at scale with this new technology? I think you're right about EVs. I think it's going to be an evolving, quite quickly evolving technology. But the difficulty, I think, is around the weight to to power ratios, and particularly for heavy goods vehicles.
Correct.
So we could be seeing all our RCVs having retrofit possibly to take some hydrogen mix in there. And then are we talking with others who, I mean, you don't have to name names, but are we bringing some partners in?
No, we had a very interesting meeting with the county just last week, where they are extremely interested to talk to us about what they can do, and of course their bus fleet. So they're interested. So, and this is these conversations we need to have, because we need to decide what size of electrolyzer we're going to put in there.
Okay.
Because if we've got all of this interest, then 1 megawatt is 1 megawatt's not going to be sufficient. And of course, the other thing which you know, Andrew, is our potential site is adjacent to the M40, which means that it's already the right place at the right time for HGVs. So that's what we're looking at the moment, and we're searching for this partner now, so that we can take it to the next stage, so that we decide what size of electrolyzer we're going to have. Incidentally, as today I read on the internet, the largest electrolyzer in the world has just been delivered to a Norwegian company.
Yeah,
and it's huge. It's the size of a bus.
Wow.
And this thing is, I don't know what it's producing. Unfortunately, the article didn't tell me what it's producing in terms of megawatts. But everybody is onto this now. Mm-hmm. And the same article said that the Euro have got a $3 billion budget for hydrogen.
The European Union. Wow. Well, it's going to take some investment, but the prize is massive.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's green.
Yeah.
It's efficient, you know, and with you saying before about the, if you try to put it in an HGV or whatever, it would be too heavy. But with hydrogen,
no,
that takes away that problem.
And the filling up time is just the same as petrol or diesel.
There you go. You know, and I think it will be one of those races, not literally races in HGVs, that would be good. But, you
it's
know,
done.
I've seen it, it's good, yeah. But between EVs and hydrogen cars, you know, hydrogen is way behind. We know that. Toyota, I think there's another manufacturer that's got one car out with hydrogen. But EVs are winning the race at the moment. But, it, you know, this could be a VHS Betamax thing over time.
But interesting, JLR have got a brand new Defender on hydrogen as an experiment.
Right,
and it's called the Zeus experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, JLR have got all these big 4x4s. And I mean, I've got a big 4x4 hybrid, but the battery just for 30 miles is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so JLR know that they've got to go for an alternative, and I think they'll go for hydrogen for that very reason, because they're big vehicles.
Let me give you the other side. I drive an I-Pace, which is an SUV, and because it's got a variable height thing, I can get Defender level clearance if I put my it does look rather weird to drive it when it's up like that. And it's completely EV. So, and it's fantastic. I have had it sort of off-road, but
what's your range, Andrew?
My real life range, because I don't drive it any differently than I used to drive my A6 Audi, to be fair, and it's not always within motorway speed limits. I have to confess to that at times. I'm sorry, Your Honour, but to be honest, I'm getting somewhere between 200 and 230 in range, depending how I drive. And actually, funnily enough, it's the air conditioner.
Yeah.
And if you're in winter and you've got heaters and wipers and on as well, that will really, and lights, headlights, that starts eating your power.
Do you find if you put it on cruise control, it's more manageable?
Yeah, it is. It's smoother. The smoother you can drive, the better your range.
Yeah, that's what
and
I
also
find.
Switch the gadgets off if you really want to go.
Yeah.
But I can drive to London and back.
Yeah,
you know, without any pain.
If you're going to London, you can charge up anywhere.
And,
you know,
and to be fair, these charges have gone. It used to take ages. I mean, it's now, 150 watt?
You can get up to 350.
You're in to have a cup of coffee, come out and drive. I mean, and I'm sorry, but I am of a certain age. After 2 hours, I need to stop.
Yeah.
So, you know, fair. I'm not finding it a massive inconvenience to my life.
You and Tesla, you can play games,
okay,
and watch Netflix and all that while you're waiting.
I got in a mate's Tesla the other day, and the car farted.
Yes.
Literally farted. I thought, I was looking at him. He's going, no, this is, it was a sound effect or something.
Yes, I did exactly the same thing 2 days ago in my brother-in-law's Tesla. Exactly the same thing.
That's why I drive a Jaguar. Can't be doing with any of that. Well, look, guys, it's been great to have you in today. I'm actually feeling quite positive about the future.
Very positive.
In Warwick District for... addressing our climate emergency. Yeah. It doesn't mean it's easy, I know, Alan, but, you know, what's your view in summary?
Well, in summary, I think actually it's an exciting opportunity for the green industry to really take first stage, really, because it's not just about open-toe sandal people saying, oh, we've got to save the climate. Mm. We've also got to think about having good industry and good jobs, which are going to be themselves sustainable. And to me, I think it's, you know, we've got the Gigafactory, hopefully, near Coventry. Mm. Our hydrogen hub is another good example. Mm. We've also got the solar farm already approved for planning permission for the hydrogen hub. And I get frustrated. I mean, for instance, another solar farm has just been refused on the other side of the A46 because it's in the green belt.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, you know, we've got to rethink our protection of the green belt. We've got to rethink our protection of listed buildings.
Yeah.
Listed buildings at the moment, you can't put PV panels on them.
Ooh, I know, that's a hot one. And also, to be fair, the biodiversity gain and the solar fields, etc., they're actually, and you can walk around them. There's a whole lot of benefits people are learning.
Great wildlife benefits.
It's huge, but it's where we've got to update some of our planning policy.
Correct.
So we've started with the DPD, and maybe we need to move on, Alan, to those.
Well, the only other thing I quickly wanted to talk about is water conservation. You know, after this last summer, I mean, I've got nine.
That's very true.
I've got nine water butts in my house, and they were all empty before. Before the end of the summer.
Wow.
And in the new local plan, we're going to have water conservation a central part of that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've got a property with rainwater harvester, and your grey water scheme. In other words, 30% of our drinking water literally goes down the toilet.
I know.
I mean, it's crazy.
I know.
And if you have a grey water system in your house and in commercial buildings, that 30% becomes grey water, rainwater that goes to your toilet, goes to your washing machine. It's just a no-brainer.
Come on, can I just say, grey water isn't really grey. It's the water off your roof.
It's just not treated water.
It's just water off your roof.
Yes.
It's the water I used to drink in Australia. We used to just collect it. That ran the whole water system for the whole house.
Yeah. You know?
It wasn't. We weren't plugged into
did
any
you have
mains.
Running water?
We did have running water. Wow. And I washed once a week. Yeah. You know? But it's not actually, when you drink rainwater, it's really nice.
Yeah.
You know, it's and I'm not doing Severn Trent out of any business.
No, but
our
dog's actually a good example of that. Our dog doesn't like water out the tap.
No.
It'll go and drink water out my water pot.
There you go. And actually, even things like washing your hair.
Yeah.
Anyway, I won't go on. But what you're really talking about is making us more resilient.
Correct.
And it means that we're not as reliant on, frankly, despots like Mr. Putin and others to give us energy, and it makes us more cost efficient as well.
And also, that's the reason that our third ambition in our climate action plan is adaptation, because we've got to change the way we're doing things, because the climate is warming up.
Sure.
Despite everything we do, it's going to warm up.
Yeah.
So we've just seen examples of that this summer. We've just seen examples in Pakistan with all the floods.
Awful.
So we've got to think about how we're going to adapt to a warmer climate, because we're not going to stop this.
No.
We can probably do an awful lot to make it less bad.
Yeah.
But we've got to also think about how we're going to change the way we deal with things like a really hot summer.
Yeah,
completely agree. And if we don't do something about the climate and the pollution that we put in the air, then the rainwater won't be drinkable anyway, you know, because it's full of pollutants.
It's acid.
Yeah, quite agree with that. Yeah.
But it's getting it working on the ground, Gareth, what you're doing and getting into businesses, and really simple things like even just, you know, the drinks test, I know is going to make us all feel safer about that.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone really wants to spike one of my drinks, but you never know. But equally, it's those practical measures, that simple things that businesses can do that we need to help and understand how to share that knowledge.
Absolutely. And I think what, you know, Alan was talking about then is that it's opening up opportunities, people.
Yeah.
You know, there's business opportunities out there, and we can, you know, Leamington, Warwick District, we're prime for it. We're in the right location in the UK. We've got the right business around us. We've got the right people here.
Yeah.
We can start up great eco-friendly businesses in Leamington. And while we're doing that, we can think about how we want the town to evolve over the coming years. I'm going to say it again, but you know, the parade being pedestrianised, we can make that a beautiful...
What about some trees?
Some trees down the parade.
Oh, heaven forbid, not
I
trees.
I know. Wouldn't it look lovely?
It you would, know, actually.
Trees down the parade, solar panelled lighting down the parade, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
More residents in the town centre, that's going to happen. Yeah. I think that's great.
Pavement lifestyle.
Lifestyle, there you go. And people want to come and visit us like they do in Cheltenham and Bath and Harrogate and other spa towns. Yeah. We've got a beautiful town.
I'd love to go swimming in the Leam too, but maybe that's a...
I
was amazed. There was elephants that used to swim in the Leam, apparently. Yeah. And I, you know, it's... It just needs, and I know Severn Trent have got a program coming forward. I might get them to a future podcast, actually, to make the Leam a swimmable river.
That would be outstanding.
Wouldn't that be extraordinary?
That would be outstanding.
You could see me there in my Speedos.
I'd rather not, but, you know, I don't think anybody would. Yeah. I'm sure we can put in some sort of some development document to make sure.
Maybe they would spike my drinks then. And that
I just want you not to go in your speedos.
Gareth, thank you. Well, look, thank you very much, Gareth Dorr, for coming in and joining us today. And Councillor Alan Reid. This has been The Local Point, and thanks for your time. I hope you found it informative. Thank you all.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's been great having you join our conversations today. Please share any comments or pose questions for future episodes by email to localpoint@icloud.com. Thanks for joining us.